Greetings, welcome, and aloha. Again, this is Dr. Kevin. That's drkevin4life@gmail.com for the email. And I am welcoming you to episode 2 of 2020, Be Prepared for Coronavirus, with the super theme of practical solutions in an upside-down world. We bring this to you as a couple of siblings, my brothers and myself, that are really desirous to speak to every one of you, to have you share these insights and motivating ideas with your friends, with your relatives, neighbors, whatever. And today, the feature of our discussion with episode 2 is going to be based upon the whole discussion of immunity. When we look at the immune system, the ability of an entire country or community to gain immunity or to be able to withstand the outbreak that comes from a new source every so often, every year or every week or every month, depending on what the situation may be. Let's review about immunity and ask overall to introduce this. How does our immunity start? And there are three parts to appreciate this fully as we answer that question. The first part is that our immunity, it is something that develops based on the transition that most of us receive when we are born. You see, we're maturing for 9 months inside of our mother's tummy. The infant stage that we are in, as we are then born and we come through the natural birth canal out of the mother into the new world. And when that happens, we are given a little teeny dose of literally millions, if not billions, of things that have accumulated and that are present in the mother's body environment as we come sliding out the birth canal. For those others of us who did not get a birth like that, it would be a C-section or surgical birth, for example, we then do not have the opportunity to get that start for our immune system to be exposed to all of these various things. The second part of our immunity that develops is what happens as we begin to suck or to get in the first food that comes from our mother, from our mother's breast. And in the first 2 weeks of the breastfeeding that many of us have received, there is a special kind of milk that comes down in that first 2 weeks that is generally labeled or called colostrum, or the clearer, lighter colored milk, and it's primarily filled with a whole lot of immune proteins and substances that the mother has developed in her own immune system that is able to then be passed on to the new child. And again, the people who did not receive this first 2 weeks of natural exposure or inoculation to that environment are at a deficit or a weakness with regard to their immune system's development. The third portion of what happens in the infant's new life is primarily exposure to the plant kingdom, especially the plant kingdom as it comes from one plant after another that are introduced into the baby food or into the way that we are fed and nourished by our mother, our parents, and our earlier months and year of life. So when we look at the immunity overall, we ask ourselves then, how is it that we are able to gain immunity after all of this in the first year or two of life on up into our adult years and so forth? And with regard to viruses and bacteria in general, there are two kinds of reactions that our body undergoes when we are exposed to new ones of these or something that is contaminating something that we drink or eat or somehow get into our presence of our body. And that is that when we react to bacteria in general, it causes a fever, which is a higher temperature raise of our body to agitate or stir up the body's immune system to react to that. And usually the more violent or the higher the temperature, the more dangerous that it potentially is to our body as well. The second one, which is not quite as quick to act as that, is the one that has to do with exposures to things like viruses or other unusual types of bacteria, like in Lyme's disease. And this involves usually a lower temperature. The body doesn't raise the temperature as high, and we react then with an antiviral type of an immune reaction. And most of us, we go through this every day, every month, every year, with either a quick immunity where our body might feel like we have a little tiny bit of a tickle and then it's gone the next day, or we might feel for a day or two that we have a little bit of chills at night and it seems to go through us quickly, or we might even have a little bit of uncomfortable feeling in our stomach for a day or two, or we go to the extreme that other people experience where it might last as much as a couple of days or weeks. And this is where we can see the difference then in people that have a more quick responding immunity versus the one that is more dragged out. It pertains to how good or how developed that immunity is. In my lifetime, as an example, I have had very, very few colds and flus overall, and I know other people that get them many times per year. And that means then that the ability of a person that gets this often is either that they're exposed to a lot more junky environment or situation with the people that they hang out with and work with and so forth, or that their immunity is not as good in being able to quickly recognize and run it through your body's immune system to be able to categorize, respond to it, and get it over with. To further look at the virus response of our bodies, we need to understand a little bit of the modern history of what virus research is all about. And this is to, again, help us to appreciate how it is that we can develop a much more powerful individual, or in our home, or in family, or in our people around us at the office type of thing, or at work, we can get a little stronger or higher level of average immunity among everyone. That's the purpose of this, to review it this way. You remember in episode 1 that I finished the last few minutes of that episode in going through 12 different questions to assess or check what your strength or weakness of your immune system actually is. And we base one of the main parts of that, as we talk about it today, to further delve into it, what is your past history of the exposure to colds and flus in particular, because that's a good indicator of how your body does with viruses. And in the last 5 years, especially as we have an older person, we want to know if this is something that happens in a strong way, a violent way, a dragged out way for weeks or a month or two when they're exposed to something, or if it comes and goes pretty easily in a couple of days, which is what has been mostly my experience. I've been on the earth here for more than 6 decades and experienced a lot, as well as seen a lot of experience with other people, including friends, family, and strangers. The virus research that I'm referring to now is to talk about for a moment how the original virus research began, because it's very fascinating and most people, including scientists, do not even know how it began. In the 1880s and 1890s, over 120, 130 years ago, the most bothersome and frustrating and difficult disease condition on the planet was not among people, it was among plants. And there was a name for one disease in particular that seemed to be present in almost everything, especially when people were trying to garden, to raise their own vegetables, fruits, and so forth. And the name of this disease condition was called tobacco mosaic disease. It seemed to really be harbored somehow with the tobacco industry or plants, and then it mimicked or found itself in the nightshade family, such as peppers, potatoes, tomatoes, those kinds of things, because it's a relative of the tobacco. And it seemed to be able to jump over into a whole lot of other plants as well, so that it was seemed to be almost a universal thing that the whole world was somehow trying to figure out how to solve or to eliminate or to reduce this exposure. So in the 1890s, it was discovered first that there was some ability of whatever it was that was in a filtered portion of a leaf that was infected, and the leaves look mottled or mosaic is what a lot of people call the disease in the greenhouse industry. They don't even use the word tobacco, it's just mosaic disease. The mottled, yellowish, orangish, splotchy appearance on leaves in between the green part of the natural leaves, chlorophyll and so forth, that's exactly what this is that we're talking about. And in filtering out some of these infected leaf portions so that there was nothing possibly able to be big enough or discovered under a microscope like a bacteria back then, it was proposed that there was some ingredient or substance. It was finally proven in 1939 under an electron microscope what that was, a virus called the tobacco mosaic disease virus. That is the backbone of the research into all of the virus research of modern time. And this is important because when we look at what plants themselves have been able to develop or to do to resist or to be immune to that all-encompassing universal virus all over the earth is what is so important and a very, very excellent opportunity for us to maximize on as human beings. When we look then at the plants and their different colorful substances that are in them, we can see that some plants produce more of these than others. And the plants that are the healthiest, when scientists have gone and researched to determine what these compounds or substances are, they've been able to come up with several different main groups of substances. For just those of us who are listening to this episode now, we need to simply appreciate that this is something that nature has out there. And when plants produce more of something in themselves to ward off disease or infections and so forth, those are called plant immune proteins, just like they are in humans or animals. The main difference is that we as humans can learn how to prepare and to use these things in abundance and not just once in a great while or in the form of some kind of a concoction or something like that. And so that's kind of where I'd like us to reflect on and think about how can myself, me, you, any or each of us do something more today to be able to get these kinds of plant-based immune-protecting substances into our bodies. The number one surest and quickest way to introduce these things into our bodies, especially as a young child or a baby even, is to use something we call bee pollen. Just think of that for a moment as we really contemplate the wonder of bees and beehives and all of that part of nature, the fact that we can take something like bee pollen and introduce that into our body, it somehow imparts a large amount of immunity to our bodies, especially children, let alone adults. And when we use bee pollen that's from the area that we live in, within several hundred miles, according to the beekeepers that I've known and talked with, it imparts a natural immunity to just about everything in the environment in your area. And a second thing to then look at how we can get these amazing plant compounds into us is to incorporate them into our recipes and to be able to make them tasty and appetizing. When we do this, we tend to want to chew on it more thoroughly and enjoy it and savor it. And that is a very good thing. I tell people to think of how to chew up a mouthful about 25 or 30 times to really break down all of these things, because these special ingredients that are in plants are mostly able to stay connected and not broken down enough to be absorbed into our bodies much use to us if we don't do that. There have been many studies that look at the absorption level of some of these powerful and important plant substances, and when there's not good breaking down of the plant structure, then we don't absorb a lot of it. So examples then of being able to do this is by cooking the plant somewhat, like we do with stir fries or soups. And one of the things that our wonderful mother taught us and focused in on doing with some of the food preparation of soups that we were able to do 50 years ago was using the first kitchen blenders and mixers to be able to take some of the partly cooked vegetables and to blend them up and to make the soup into more of a thick puree, or kind of like the French cooking would tend to do more of that when you have partially or even mostly cooked soups, and blending it up to make that kind of a thick base soup. When you do that, it breaks up a lot of these compounds that are in the plants. And another way, of course, that we've had even more popular in the last decade or two is to do this kind of a mixing or high-powered blending of fruits and vegetables in a mixer in a kitchen as well. These are all ways that we are able to much greatly improve the uptake and the absorption of these special things in our bodies. And to circumscribe this in one great whole as we wrap up episode 2 today, I'd like to emphasize that we should try to get oils into our diet more abundantly than we do also. All of the people on earth that have been studied who have a much healthier lifespan and longevity, they all have some basis in a very good oil use in their recipes and in the population of people that are using their varieties of foods that make them healthy. Again, this is Dr. Kevin at Dr. Kevin for Life. That's Dr. Kevin, the number 4, life, all in lowercase, at gmail.com.